Hi everyone, and welcome to the Highlights from Ukraine Long Talk, where we dive deep into the specific topics about Ukraine. Today I'm joined by a co-host, Yulia Kondrushenko, whom you know from our previous Long Talk. Welcome, Yulia.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
And our special guest today is Oleksiy Melnik, Ukrainian military and political expert, co-director of foreign policy and international security programs at the Razumkov Center think tank. We've invited Oleksiy to talk with us about the policy and military topics around Ukraine because, well, we are nearing the second anniversary of this since the start of the full-scale invasion. We will start with the hottest topic. We are recording today basically less than 24 hours after President of Ukraine Volodymyr Zelensky decided to fire Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, General Valery Zaluzhny, a person who held this position since 2019, and Ground Forces Commander Oleksandr Syrsky has been appointed in his stead. Basically, it follows couple weeks, or some may even say couple months, of speculations and numerous rumors about a rift between the president and General Zaluzhny. So those of you who are our patrons will be lucky enough to be the first to hear our discussion about this topic. But if you want to join this very special club, it's super easy. Just follow the link in the description. Go to our Patreon page, subscribe. It's not much. It's like $5 a month. Like, I don't know, a cup of coffee costs something like that. So just subscribe and you will be the first to receive our Long Talk episodes and many more. There are variants of support you can choose, starting, like I said, with $5 and up to $100 for, I don't know, probably those who have the most money or those who are the most generous. So feel free to join this special club and support us because, like I said, we are, like I said many times on these Long Talks and we are an independent initiative of just a couple people, so your support would be very much appreciated. Sorry, talking too long. Oleksiy, it's what we've probably expected for quite a while. Like I said, been rumors, discussions about whether it will happen or not. But can you comment on the decision that the president made? Have you expected something like this? What it means?
First of all, thank you for inviting me. It's a real pleasure to be with you. I'm delighted to share my knowledge with our audience. As you mentioned already, I'm a military expert. I have long-time expertise. I assume some knowledge about how a country defense system supposed to be managed. And the latest decision of the President Zelensky to dismiss his commander-in-chief is something probably that I would say goes against what I learned by doing or what I learned by reading many books. He dismissed one of the most successful Ukrainian general, one of the most popular, not only military, but even individual in Ukraine. And I'm afraid that the main reason behind such decision was a political one. There have been plenty of rumors about President Zelensky worrying about his possible political competitor. So whatever had been said officially, that President Zelensky wanted to change the course of war, to get out of this situation, being named as a stalemate or stagnation, it doesn't matter. But I don't believe that these were the main reasons. And even his official order, which was published, there is nothing about what is the reason to dismiss the commander.
Yeah, just to be clear, I believe, like I said, it's less than 24 hours since General Zaluzhny was dismissed, and I totally agree. We haven't seen like any like official, let's say, statement or declaration on why he was dismissed. I believe so, right, Yulia?
There was yesterday a statement from Minister of Defense Umerov, who was talking about the wider reasons for dismissal, framing it in the absence of military strategy. So definitely there's been a lot of rumors and discussions on the political motivation behind the dismissal. Definitely lots of our readers may have seen coverage in international media, and they've done a lot of reporting yesterday as well. But if we focus for a moment on the military side of it, I believe that the Supreme Commander-in-Chief Zelensky is right to change the commander, if that is the decision that he decides to take. It's definitely within the civilian oversight. So the power is there and he exercised it. So what do you think is the direct military implication of the change? Do you think there will be a significant change in strategy in the military side right away? So if removing Zaluzhny, to play the devil's advocate, is what's needed to remove the politics out of the equation, do you think this is the solution or not? Again, not putting my personal opinion out there, just curious what you think.
I fully agree with you. This is in his presidential authority. It's an absolutely legitimate decision. Also, every time we talk about rights, responsibility comes with. So by making such a decision, he has not just executed his legal right, but he, I think, is facing the risk of responsibility in case if the Zaluzhny successor fails. You mentioned strategy. In fact, there are no accusation, direct accusation, that Zaluzhny had wrong strategy. Having said that, a couple of times there was something about new strategy needed. And by the way, Zaluzhny in his articles for The Economist, for CNN.
Yeah, but by the way, we recommend you to read those articles, especially the one, the freshest one to the CNN.
Yeah, it was really good on the use of unmanned aerial systems and the warfare. It was really great.
And for me, actually, it was a kind of public declaration about the very deep analysis and about his strategic vision, how to change the situation. So I would disagree with those who would say that Zaluzhny didn't have a strategy. At the same time, what was mentioned by the president and also by some comments in the media this morning by the newly appointed general commander-in-chief, that he presented some bullets of his strategy. So it would be nice to think or accept that there was a competition of strategies. So one that president didn't like, and the second one which looked for president kind of very perspective. My only concern that, or I expect, that General Zirsky's strategy main aim was not just to please the president, but was to serve the main purpose, the strategic objectives of this war.
So, just on what you mentioned, Zelensky, the President Zelensky, when yesterday he, let's say, announced resignation or dismissal of General Zaluzhny from his position, he outlined what he expects from the new team. So, to be clear, according to the President, I have not seen like new decrees or anything, but not only Zaluzhny will be dismissed or is already dismissed, but like a whole new team will come into the commandment of the Ukrainian army. So, and he, among the things that he outlined was a realistic, detailed action plan for the armed forces of Ukraine for 2024, which must take into account the real situation on the battlefield now and the prospects. Also, fair redistribution of Western weapons in favor of those who are currently on the front line. solving logistic problems, also the generals should, quote-unquote, know the front. The excessive and unjustified number of personnel in the headquarters must be adjusted. Effective rotation, effective system for training of recruits, and so on and so forth. So a whole list of such expectations. So can we, first of all, think or understand this as, let's say, points in which Zelensky's expectations, this is not only Zelensky's expectations towards Syrsky, but also like he's saying that Zaluzhny failed to deliver on those issues. So those that I've mentioned before, can it be understood in this way?
In fact, President Zelensky hasn't mentioned any single time that Zaluzhny failed to deliver any of the items that you read. So it's rather strange, because I would assume that the same list of priorities was on Zaluzhny's agenda as well. Let's assume that President Zelensky hoped that the new commander has some fresh ideas. He will bring, definitely, when he was talking about changes to leadership, it's a kind of very natural. Then when the new boss comes, he brings some people not necessarily just loyal to him, but also that he had his former subordinates, that the people showed their ability to solve problems. So that's quite a natural process. The main question again, whether the problems or the solution for these problems is just a matter of changing people.
Exactly. And actually, I think it would be interesting for the audience to understand, it's one person who was dismissed yesterday, right? There will be some who will also be dismissed and changed. But what is the scale of this mid-level management in the armed forces? So we know that the total of the armed forces of Ukraine is somewhere in the ballpark of 1 million people. So between one person and 1 million, how many mid-level command units are there? Just the idea for people to understand the scale of management issues that arise in an organization of that size.
Honestly, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
But what
definitely.
I know.
Yeah, probably that's a state secret, I can imagine.
But you know, just
the exact figure.
The idea.
No, but you're absolutely right about the idea.
Yeah.
There is a kind of Ukrainian tradition when a new minister appointed, it means that the shock through the system. So in a matter of weeks, he will change his deputies and down to the level of like middle or very low management. The military system is slightly different. Not slightly, I would say substantially different, because military people, most of the military people are professionals. So there shouldn't be, and usually there are no political appointments. And definitely there will be some changes, except his personal office. There will be some changes on the key, the highest level positions, but on the level of, let's say, brigade commanders or battalion commanders, they all of them will stay in place. There are normal procedures of promotion or of rotation, but this is not the case. New boss wants to change the system completely.
And I mean, a lot of these people are career military, as you say. They've spent years in the system. They're building up their position. So is Syrsky. He has been in the system for a very, very long time, longer than Zaluzhny, a little bit. He's slightly older, 8 years, I believe. They have a bit of an age difference.
Yeah, something like 8 years.
So what is the reputation that we're understanding about Syrsky.
Who is Alexander Syrsky? Let me hear a quote again from the president. It's not a direct quote, but indirect one. So in the same evening video address, Zelensky called Syrsky the most experienced Ukrainian commander. He said that Syrsky led the defense of Kyiv and the so-called Kharkiv counteroffensive. He also he has already been awarded title Hero of Ukraine. That's the highest award, basically, that any person in Ukraine, civilian or military, but in this particular case military, can receive, basically for successful defense of Kyiv. That's according to the media. He also commanded the defense of Bakhmut. I believe all our listeners know about this city by now, so last winter. And efforts to retake the city from the Russian forces in the summer 2023 was also led by Syrsky. And currently, like before this appointment, he was one of those who, according to the media, was commanding the defense in Avdiivka, quite a hot point on the front line, and Kupiansk area, where Russians are trying to retake some of the positions they lost in 2022 during the above-mentioned Kharkiv counteroffensive. So that's what, let's say, what we know about, like, the latest activities of General Syrsky. What can you tell us more about what you know about him?
And the reputation, because the strategic level says one thing, and then people who serve under his command say other things.
Yes, indeed. He, if not the most experienced general, but definitely one of the most. And he has very impressive career. He has a lot of achievements. And there are, as you mentioned, some rumors or I would say some not very nice compliments about his image in the armed forces. Having said that, I should also mention that there are different opinions among officers. Mm-hmm. Some of these opinions, like they agree with the president that he is the best general they ever served under his command. And there are different opinions, not as positive. Mm-hmm. So there are different opinions. Even if there are some accusations about him, let's put it in a polite way, not paying enough attention to or not taking the best care about his people, I would be careful in making the final judgment whether it was his own fault or it was just kind of bad luck of the situation where he happened to be in command. Mm-hmm. Again, we should be very careful with making final judgments, like some of the Ukrainian journalists were asking questions that, well, he was born in Russia. Mm-hmm. Was it his fault? Probably not.
Oh, yeah.
And
let's blame it on the woman who delivered him in Russia, right?
Yeah. No.
And he graduated from Moscow Defense Academy.
So did Nayev, plenty of other generals.
But it was plenty of during the Soviet time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we should be very careful. And I think the most important point that we now... it happened, and now we should calm down and give him a chance to show his performance, and then, you know, to judge whether his promises come realized or, again, one of his priorities, if we talk about taking care of people, one of his priorities being declared, this is soldiers' life, which is the most important resource for armed forces.
I found it interesting that he said that in today's remarks made to the media.
Perhaps he was aware about what kind of image, at least in his social media.
Yeah, so to clarify, so basically what you, our listeners, probably already understood from the discussion, so there is, let's say, some... controversy, let's put it that way, around disappointment. But it's really, some people say that what's been already mentioned, right, about him not caring much about people's lives and so on and so forth. But to be honest, from my point of view, it's sometimes really hard to divide, especially in social media, like where it's genuine people talking about, I don't know, some examples that they know about anything, or it's just some rumors been born, been spread, and we don't really know, as you know, we at war with Russia, who's sometimes quite sneaky in the informational warfare. And so, like, should we cross out that part of this is either supported or even, you know, ignited by Russia's forces in social media and so on? So it's really complicated topic, let's say, about him. And you know, I've heard an interesting comment about his, like you said, Russian or Soviet past. So I find it quite interesting. So basically, a person said, pointed out that Zaluzhny, who's praised by the same people who sometimes say do not appreciate, let's say, Syrsky's experiences and so on. So they remind that basically Zaluzhny is also a person who has a deep knowledge in Russian strategy, military strategy, who publicly many times praised the level of Russian military school. So from my mind, I'm no expert in this, but probably that's okay to know how your enemy is fighting. So if Syrsky have studied like how the Soviet style of fighting, knows how Russians are fighting, I see only pluses in this. I don't know, from my point of view, what you think.
That's a kind of basic knowledge, Sun Tzu.
Yeah, you should know your enemy, right?
You should know your enemy and never underestimate your enemy.
Exactly. What do you think now that, as you described, Syrsky, the most senior and most experienced general, is in?
I said one of the.
Oh, sorry. Thank you for the correction.
I think I know what question you want to ask. But before that, just for clarification of our listeners, so we like how the hierarchy looks like in Ukrainian armed forces. So basically, there is commander in chief, right? But Ukrainian army, especially, is consisted of several branches, air force. Ground forces. So, and Syrsky was commander of ground forces, right? Several others. So, will his replacement mean that the commanders of these forces will be replaced as well?
There is some confusion in military vocabulary used by civilians.
Oh, sorry.
There are some different names, because every time we say Ukrainian army, for Americans it sounds like land forces. They call land forces army. In Ukraine it's kind of synonyms between army and armed forces. So we have Ukrainian armed forces, and they have, as you rightly mentioned, a number of branches. Land forces is one of them. Also in Ukraine now we more and more use the term not the armed forces but defense forces, because in addition to the armed forces, which is air force, navy, special force operations, transportation, we also have National Guard, which is a military police structure. We have even bodyguard, which is supposed to be purely police structure. And even some units of patrol police are fighting on the front line, or they operate so close to the front line that sometimes they have to perform infantry tasks.
True.
So let's make it clear that defense forces. And General Syrsky, as his predecessor, is a commander in chief. He's a force commander. Mm-hmm. And even if the National Guard, for instance, is not under his direct command, they still under his control and supervision, because all the defense forces are supposed to be within this military vertical.
Mm-hmm.
So he is
commanded all the defense forces.
He's in command of all the defense forces,
mm-hmm.
ideally under one single command. Now the land forces, of course, the new general is supposed to be appointed because he cannot perform the same function.
Mm-hmm. And,
you know, one person cannot hold mm-hmm. these two heads or two chairs, as we say in Ukraine. Also, what one of the reforms been done in Ukraine, which made our system, command and control system, different from what we inherited from the Soviet Union, is that two key positions of the force commander and chief of general staff separated, because in Russia there is still one person, General Gerasimov, mm-hmm. who is a commander-in-chief and chief of general staff at the same time. So General Sirsky, now his job to be a force commander, and the rest of things like planning, force generation, logistics are supposed to be done by people who his subordinates.
Can you please, in one sentence, say, because I think our audience is mostly civilians, so the difference between commander-in-chief and general staff commander, head of general staff. But in one sentence.
well, again, commander-in-chief and force commander, it's about the same person. So the different names for the same.
Yeah.
So to make not confuse our listeners, force commander. And the chief of the general staff is under mm-hmm. his command.
Mm-hmm.
So he's responsible for supporting his job as a force commander.
Mm-hmm.
To generate
for planning sort
of force generation, this is his responsibility. The force commander is supposed to have this strategic vision and to execute the operation, being prepared together. So it's not something like the chief of general staff will bring him, show a plan, and you go forward.
Mm-hmm.
They work hand to hand.
So for civilians, just to make it a bit more contextual for people who work in business, for example, you would have the CEO and you would have chief of staff, and they would work together to accomplish the goals of the CEO and make sure that the strategic vision is transformed within the corporate structure. So that would be probably the analogy.
It's quite similar. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the question I had was actually slightly different, because being Zaluzhny, it's a person, a legend, a whole sort of image for the people. He was the face of the armed forces during the full-scale invasion, and he has become something of more than a man, I'd say. What do you do after that? Where do you go next? Where do you think Zaluzhny will find his place now in the system? Because the exit speech made by Zelensky, obviously they try to make the exit very soft, saying that they are offering Zaluzhny to stay part of the team. Definitely it has to do with the attempts to make it nicer to the audience, whom it was not quite happy with the direction of travel. So how do you think this will play out in the coming weeks?
Definitely he will be busy. 2 weeks ago, when this first news or this first leak we saw in the media, that President Zelensky offered him a couple of options,
mm-hmm.
like to become his main military advisor,
mm-hmm.
or even a position of the Secretary of National Security Defense Council. And as we know, General Zaluzhny refused. And I think that talking about his titles or position, Zaluzhny is already
mm-hmm.
title.
History.
Yes, and he actually doesn't need any official position to be useful and to serve his country. Some of the options, he could go and teach in the Defense Academy.
True.
To train new Ukrainian, not new, but strategic level Ukrainian officers. Also, I think he can also do a great job as informal ambassador of Ukraine,
true,
traveling abroad. I think he will be extremely welcomed in any defense or educational institution in the West. He can advocate Ukrainian interest in the West. Because, again, as I said, Zaluzhny doesn't need to be introduced.
There is a little bureaucratic problem, though. We have martial law, and he is a military, and it's not easy to get decommissioned, demobilized as a military person.
But does he need to get decommissioned to do all of the things that you, Alexei, mentioned, I think?
This is not an issue at all for such rank. Definitely, he's not going to retire.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one of this kind of peculiarities in the military career.
Mm-hmm.
That unlike in a civilian job, as soon as you reached the highest position, especially in the peacetime, 3 to 5 years being in this position, you have to give the way to the next one. And then there is no other job to be no other military position to be promoted. That's kind of, you know.
Mm-hmm. Unless Ukraine joins NATO and he becomes the NATO chief one day.
No, again, NATO chief is a political appointee.
Down the line.
Yes, but even in the martial law, our military still have the opportunity to travel abroad, mm-hmm, if it's done for the business
for
purpose.
Business.
So I don't see any problems for General Zaluzhny traveling. Definitely, he will not try to get retirement, and he will not go fishing, just, you know, reading books.
Well, that would be misuse of his experience.
Yes, or taking care of his children or grandchildren. Probably, yeah, he doesn't have it.
But I think we probably can all agree that, he probably one of those who really deserves some rest, maybe, some holiday for a little bit, at least. So I have a question, coming back to General Sirsky. Basically, what you envisage to be his first moves on the position, first decisions, and I suggest for you to answer to that after a short break. We would really appreciate if you could recommend us to your friends and family, as well as share information on social media. This way more people would learn about the podcast and truth about Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And we are back, as you know, with our today's guest, Alexei Melnik, Ukrainian military and political expert. And before our break, I asked the question about what do you envisage to be the first moves, first decisions, or first tasks by newly appointed Ukrainian Commander-in-Chief General Oleksandr Sirsky.
I can hardly expect any radical decisions. We talked about changing some key generals. This is not what I expect. I would describe as a radical decisions, but if we really mean what he can do radically new on the front line, his space of maneuver is rather limited by very objective factors. What could be expected, maybe some more, but not too many details about his strategy, about his vision, how he see Ukrainian war, Russian-Ukrainian war should progress, what kind of priorities, and maybe he would provide an answer to one of the most critical questions now in Ukraine about how we are going to generate force, how we are going to mobilize more people, and the most sensitive questions, whether our soldiers who've been fighting already almost 2 years have any kind of prospects to be retired or to at least have long rest in the nearest time.
Yeah, we'll definitely discuss this topic maybe a little bit later.
Well, Why not now?
Let's do it now, Julia.
We definitely, for our audience to understand, there is currently a draft law on mobilization in Rada. It was voted in Ukraine. You voted in two readings. The first one was voted in. Now the MPs have a bit of time to work on the amendments. And the plan is, and rumors are, that it will be voted in second reading before the end of the month. So it is an issue that is alive, and it is firmly in the remit of Verkhovna Rada to now make the changes and make the policy that then the general staff can use to plan their campaign for the year. How do you think the difficult image of Syrsky will interact with mobilization? Because there are already a lot of hesitation about people who are unwilling to commit to go and fight in the front lines, and there is this difficult image that we discussed earlier. How do you think these two will interact? Will people be willing to go and serve Syrsky as they were for Zaluzhny?
It may affect to some extent, because again, for those who been undecided and for family members, having such a popular person in charge of the armed forces give them some hope, some reassurance that this commander will take care, no matter how, you know, objective this perception is. But the problem not again in the military, not only in the military,
yeah.
Because our government, I mean, different branches, lawmakers or executive government, they have this long time Ukrainian tradition. Is there is a problem, you have to make amendments to law or
there is an existing law already, right?
Yeah, there is an existing law, and many discussions around about this the new draft law done by people who never bothered themselves to read the law,
mm-hmm.
Or the draft law. So unless it's like in the healthcare system, before you treat illness, you have to make a proper diagnosis, mm-hmm. of this illness. And I think that this first part of a job hasn't been done properly. So unless we figure out all the key problems, all these demotivation factors, you can hardly work out a reliable solution. Yeah, but there is also, having said that, there is also quite progress in trying not just this legal system, but trying different commercial approaches to contract more people. There are also very good experience on the units level. There are some brigades mm-hmm. who actually were not waiting unless the state will develop this system. So they do recruiting by their own resources. And for instance, the 3rd Brigade,
yes.
In Ukraine, probably all the people know this, very famous. What is their success? They applied some commercial, very civilian
marketing tools,
but the key, as one of the representatives of the brigade rightly mentioned, the key is not that you apply these marketing methods, but the key is that what you show on the big boards,
mm-hmm.
the soldier or new recruit will see exactly what he was promised. And mm-hmm. this is the key, and this is this kind of approach that the state should also apply, that you promise people something and then they join our forces and they see what they were promised.
Expectation management is very important.
Expectation management.
Yes. How do you think the expectation management is now playing out in Ukraine's wider strategy? So, you know, in 2022, obviously, the military and political leadership had to manage people's morale. And so they kept on saying that this will finish soon. The legendary 2-3 weeks have evolved into 2-3 months and then 2-3 years. Now here we are at the second anniversary of the full-scale invasion. This year we're also marking the 10th anniversary of the illegal annexation of Crimea. So What do you think is the realistic timeline, and how does Ukraine and the international allies should plan for this long-term vision?
It's a very good question. and a difficult one.
Yes.
On the one hand, state leaders have to take care about kind of general mood in a society. They should have give some hope to people.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you have to be honest, because the year 2023, we saw this the worst example of overheating public's expectations,
yes,
and then the huge disappointment. So this is about this balance. Tell people the truth and give them some hope, not just verbally, but they should see and practice. There is also, I wouldn't call it a problem, rather an issue of developing a management system of our success.
Mm-hmm.
Because last year, after Ukrainian offensive operation failed, many people were disappointed and talking that, there is no hope.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the hardest time. And they forgot that just at the beginning of the year 2022, our best expectation was to survive one day, survive another 3 days, and
have heat, make your food,
have heat
on fire at home. Yes.
Have electricity.
Yeah.
And so we've been through this hard time many times.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that Ukrainian people already well experienced, even if they hear something from politicians too optimistic, they adjust their own expectations. They simply don't follow what's been said, and they are already used to this kind of situation. And if you look at, for instance, Razumkov Center's public opinion polls about people's expectation in this really hard time, people, the significant segment of the Ukrainian society, about 30%, still believe that Ukraine is capable to solve the problems in the near future. Another quarter of people assure that Ukraine is capable to solve this problem in the longer term, but there is no kind of general disappointment.
I saw in a lot of polling that the expectations of people and how this plays out have shifted, and interestingly, all throughout, there is still a very big portion of people who are sure that Ukraine will prevail in the end. And this is just simply amazing, given how low the morale has been over the past couple of months with all the uncertainty on the battlefield and news from, you know, the grinding fighting in Avdiivka and potential assault on the Kupiansk direction. It's difficult, and it's quite incredible, actually.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, to be honest, what you mentioned about hope and expectations, I think you're completely right. I believe the complicated topic of last year's offensive or counteroffensive, whatever you want to call it, good example of quite heated expectations, but probably not only in Ukraine, within Ukraine, but also outside of Ukraine as well, by our partners who invested a lot into this counteroffensive. I believe Ukrainians can argue about that the support has not been given that fast or on time or in the amount that was required for this counteroffensive to succeed. Nevertheless, the disappointment probably was not only limited to Ukraine, but also outside of Ukraine. Even though I should mention that I believe there is still an example that sometimes is mentioned both by Ukrainians and non-Ukrainians as well, of success of 2023. And I believe that's the Black Sea, probably. right? Where Ukraine, quite, I don't know, for me personally, unexpectedly, I'm no expert, but still, managed to set up this grain corridor that's independent from Russia. And in 2022, the corridor we had was basically dependent on Russia, but now with thanks to some tech solutions with sea drones and so on and so forth, so Ukraine managed to get this opportunity. And what do you think? Do we really communicate properly the successes that we have to counterbalance some of the failed expectations?
I fully agree with you that one of the reasons for these disappointments is the lack of proper communication. And it's not just a matter of number of hours or number of articles. I mean, number of hours in the air or number of articles or number of speakers in the foreign media. Sometimes it's a problem of this measurement system that I already mentioned. Because back in 2022, in the spring 2022, let's say at the beginning of this aggression, some calculations made by very famous and experienced experts and politicians would give Ukraine 3 days to maximum 3 days, because the Russian army is the second best army in the world.
Notorious.
And Ukraine didn't have any chance to survive for longer than a few days or a couple of weeks. So we saw that Ukraine survived. Moreover, in 1 month, Russians were forced to leave the northern part of Ukraine, because they stayed 15 kilometers, almost on the suburbs of Kyiv.
Yeah.
And they were forced to leave. No, it was not a goodwill gesture.
Well,
it was a very, very forced decision made because they faced the real chance to be defeated completely. Mm-hmm. I mean, these particular forces that entered Ukraine from the Belarusian territory. 2022, great examples of Ukrainian successful operations against a bigger force. Ukraine at that time was also outgunned, but due to some strategies, tactics, Ukraine succeeded. And by the way, Sirsky, General Sirsky, as we said, was in charge of one of these operations.
But hasn't these successes exactly created those, high expectations?
That's exactly the point. Because at a certain moment, people said, oh, okay, now Ukrainians are holding strategic initiative and everything is going to be like we saw already. Then at the end of the 2023, I jumped already.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because we discussed about the offensive.
Yeah.
At the end of the 2023, I saw very nice graphics like how many square kilometers been liberated and how many square kilometers been lost.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at these graphs, you see that Ukraine lost twice more territory than liberated.
In
2023. And for many experts, it was like, situation is hopeless. Ukraine is not able to liberate its territory, because if Ukraine advance is on a speed like we saw in average in 2023, that it will be needed, like 70 years will be needed to reach the Azov Sea coast.
Yeah, people treating it like a math problem or something, right?
Right, and it is a completely wrong approach. Because I repeat again, there must be proper measured system of success. You already described the enormous success of Ukrainian defense forces, not just Navy, not special forces, on the Black Sea. Mm-hmm. This is a kind of very humiliating situation for the Russians, because they were defeated by the counterpart, which doesn't have any classic Navy in the classic sense. No big ships. Yeah. And they suffered not just heavy, but very humiliating losses. Mm-hmm. Is this a success? Yes, definitely. Not because of the number of ship being destroyed, but because of the effect that Ukraine produced for the Russians' ability to conduct the war. And the same or similar situation, if we try to use different measurement instruments, Ukraine didn't liberate a significant part of its territory in 2023. But if you look at how many Russian soldiers were killed or badly wounded, how many Russian tanks and other heavy equipment being destroyed, and also what we see more and more nowadays, that how many strikes been delivered on the Russian critical infrastructure inside Russia. So yeah, all these steps are aimed towards undermining Russian capabilities to finance this war, and at the end of the day, it will be one of not the main factor, but one of the factors which will probably lead to the Russian defeat.
Do you think we have firmly entered the war of attrition? And if so, do you think Ukraine has a chance, given that it has fewer resources than Russia does?
Definitely, yes. And in fact, we entered this phase of the war of attrition in the middle of summer last year. Mm-hmm. Here we have, again, to be careful with making judgments, because if you look at military balance, how many pieces of this equipment or that equipment, air force superiority of the Russians, manpower, then, you know, as you say, it's a chess mat game. It's clear who is the winner, mm-hmm, who is a potential loser.
But it's not a math problem, it's as we figured.
Look at, for instance, Russian Air Force. They have 10 times more aircraft,
yeah,
modern aircraft. Mm-hmm. But they do not enjoy air superiority behind the front line.
Mm-hmm.
So having 10 times bigger Air Force, they are not able to use it. The full capacity. And the problem with people, yes, one of the biggest problem of people, and here, again, ridiculously, one of the biggest advantages of the Russians is not a number of people they can mobilize, but the approach of, you know, or perception of the value of people. They can afford to throw, say, hundreds, yeah, every day, about 800 in average Russian soldiers are killed or wounded. Mm-hmm. But still they don't face any, the Russian leadership don't face any significant destabilization or protest inside Russia. So that's about how careful you should be by judging, who has better chances in winning the war of attrition. Having said that, we should also be aware that Ukraine's economic resources, Ukraine's financial resources are nothing to compare with the Russians. And that's why there is a critical dependence of Ukraine on the external foreign support. And this is one of the key factors and one of the key challenges to maintain this support, at least at the level that we had before, or in the best case scenario to secure the increase of the foreign support.
And it's a perfect transition to our next topic, exactly about foreign support. But let's discuss it after another very short break.
Thank you for listening to the Highlights from Ukraine podcast. We're a commercial initiative of several people, and we need your help to grow. Share information about the podcast, rate us in the app, subscribe to our Patreon by following the link in the description to this episode. With your help, we are growing.
And we are back from our short break with my co-host Yulia Kondrushenko and our guest Oleksiy Melnyk, Ukrainian military and political expert. So right before we made a pause, we decided to switch to a topic of international support. So basically, you already said that Ukraine is, let's face it, dependent on Western military aid, probably fair to say financial aid as well. And what's been in the news, I believe one of the top topics before the dismissal of Commander-in-Chief was, of course, the topic of support. So EU finally, after several months of diplomatic maneuvers, discussions, tricks, and negotiations with Hungary, managed to approve support for Ukraine in the amount of 60 billion euros. But it's not for 1 year, and it's a financial aid. It's not a military aid, so it will be spent to support Ukraine's basically budget. So, but when we talk about military aid, I believe the leading country here is the US, and till now, at least for the moment when we are recording this, and I remind you to enjoy these recordings as soon as they are ready, join our Patreon society, following the link in the description. But at the moment of this recording, the support of $60 billion from the US. No, it's not 60.
No worries.
Oh, okay. Okay. Substantial amount of support from the US is not yet still approved. So the question is, what are the consequences of the situation that we currently have? Ukraine enjoyed fantastic level of support, financial and military, from the start of the war, probably unprecedented since the World War II, and now such troubles. What are the consequences?
We already discussed that this war entered a new phase, the war of attrition, and the war of attrition by nature is about exhausting one of the sides and force it for concessions. And also I said about Ukraine's strengths and weaknesses. So this is one, paradoxically, one of the Ukrainian strengths and weaknesses at the same time is the critical dependence on our partners. I even don't want to speculate about this scenario when suddenly Ukraine loses the foreign support, because it's quite obvious. Russia and Putin is obsessed, as you know, with Ukraine, and they will they are ready to pay any price, at least the current leadership in Russia. So let's put aside this horrible scenario and think, well, not completely, I mean, not pretend that it is not possible. It is highly unlikely, but still. And get prepared for this worst case scenario. This is typical military approach, and this is probably a proper management approach, that especially in the military always think about the worst case scenario.
Hope for the best, but prepare for the worst.
Prepare for the worst, but it is just like wise man expression, but in the military it's just a matter of business. So in this case, there is a great degree of uncertainty about what's going to happen with the American support, not just now, but in the 1 year time. There are also some dynamics inside Europe. As you said, this time European leaders found the solution how to overcome Viktor Orban's veto, but there is no guarantee that in 1 year or in 2 years, similar crisis or similar situation is not going to occur. That's why Ukraine already, by the way, has taken number of steps. I would mention just few. It's investment in defense, national defense production. huge challenge, another big topic. In a time of war, to develop your defense production being the primary target of the Russian strikes. Second is formalizing of our bilateral relations with the key partners, G7 members. Mm-hmm. So the first agreement being signed between official Kyiv and London. Some people call it security guarantees, proper to call it security, mutual security obligations. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of a paper that provides more certainty. If there is a problem with these biggest sponsors like the United States of America, we still have channels of bilateral relations, we still have the European Union. So situation is not hopeless. And by the way, just to add, Russia's economy is not doing very well. Sanctions slowly but steadily are working. Mm-hmm. And there are some internal developments in Russia that probably not seen on the surface yet.
Okay, well, that sounds promising. But like from your understanding, is there any, let's say, deadline, especially for the U.S. support to be approved, that Ukraine needs to start to get in? Because I believe the last package of military aid Ukraine, not received, but it was announced right before the new year. And it was the last. So, like, today's is already February, and it's for the whole time we have not seen any new announcements. So, from your understanding, for how long can we move on without the support, without it, I don't know, critically affecting the front line?
I have no idea. I even not trying to follow all these developments in Washington, D.C., because this is the area I simply can't do nothing. So that's why I don't follow, not completely, of course, I'm trying to follow, but not like on a daily basis and trying to understand all the details or make predictions. For me, and I think for military planners, is important to understand, to accept the fact that there is a problem. Mm-hmm. And then what we already know from the news that Ukrainian military made already some adjustments to the ratio of shells available daily. Mm-hmm. So I assume that there is already some predictions like next 3 months we have to restrain our offensive efforts, stay in defense, look for alternative solutions like FPV drones. Mm-hmm. If the decision in Washington is made earlier, that's a good news. But I repeat that we, as a military, the military should consider the worst case scenario.
I just wanted to remind our audience who are located in the U.S. that actually you could do something to help us receive the needed aid. Call your representative, call your senator, tell them to support Ukrainian cause, because they do have to listen to their constituents, and you could help us be more on the offensive, hopefully, and liberate more territory soon.
Yeah. Exercise your the rights that democracy gives you, which, by the way, Russia is not.
Yeah, thank you. That's a very good remark. But also, if I may, to add some reasons why to do this. Not because you love Ukraine. Ukraine is really deserve to be loved or liked, at least. But this is about your own interests. There's been already very fruitful discussion in the United States how these taxpayers' money spend. Because actually, this is not exactly the cash which goes to Ukraine. This is the money invested in jobs in the United States, in the U.S. economy. But also there is a crucial security interest in mm-hmm. the United States, in Europe. There is a hot discussion now in Europe how many years remain before Russia starts invasion against an European country. And the best way to avoid such scenario, to invest now in Ukraine and to eliminate the threat, if not completely, but to the extent that Russia will not be thinking about any military aggression for the next, let's say, 5 to 10 years.
And not only Russia.
Not only Russia, because also what is going on here in Ukraine are watched closely by China, by Iran. And let's show them that military aggression is not acceptable in the current world.
Yeah, in the 21st century. So I believe we have hundreds more questions and topics to discuss, but we do need to wrap up. So I would like to thank you. And I think it's perfect that we've finished on basically a call for action for our audience. So guys, please listen to this. It's really important. Thank you, Oleksiy. Thank you, Yulia, for joining me today for co-hosting. Oleksiy, thank you for sharing your experience and knowledge.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, our audience, for your support. And follow the link in the description to join the Patreon club and be among the first to listen to these Long Talk episodes. And by the way, this way you will enable us to do more of such wonderful talks and get such wonderful guests into our studio. Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Thank you.